And I said you called Dr. Roberts. Day or night, he'll be there anytime.
Back now, live from the Pabst Theater in downtown Milwaukee with Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. The medicine being practiced on TV shows like Grey's Anatomy, ER, and House may not always be grounded in reality, but one thing that television sometimes gets right, maybe even often gets right, is the sometimes awkward relationship between doctors and patients. Medical students get lessons in a variety of ways, from Grey's Anatomy, the book, to lectures, to computer modeling, and clinical work. But while those venues are well-suited to teaching the science of medicine, they're not always good at the complex equation that takes place when a doctor and a patient converge on the same exam room, especially if the doctor is, say, 30 years old and the patient is 85. Increasingly, schools such as the Medical College of Wisconsin are turning to a teaching model called Objective Structured Clinical Examination, also known by the more friendly acronym OSCE, and it has one key similarity to television shows. The patients are actors playing an assigned role, but the people treating those patients will one day be real doctors. We're going to speak now with three people that are involved in this really innovative way of training. Dr. Edmund Duthie, Jr. is a professor of medicine and chief of the Geriatrics and Gerontology Division at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Duthie, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Rishi Parmar is a fourth-year medical student at the Medical College of Wisconsin and has participated in many objective structured clinical examinations. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me here.
And Frank Bever is with us, too. He's been a so-called standardized patient, playing the role at the medical college since 2001. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Duthie, let's start with you. Describe what an OSCE is in a little more detail for us and where it fits in among all the other kinds of medical training.
Yeah, well, essentially, as you know, we can assess medical knowledge with paper and pencil tests. You've been through these. Everybody in the audience who's been to schools had that experience. But when we're training physicians, we also need to begin to assess skills and attitudes. And those can't be assessed very well with a paper and pencil. So what we do is I, as a physician, come up with the scenario and then work with medical educators at the college who then help translate that into an objective structured clinical examination. And that means to recruit people like Frank, train him on what it is we're needing to get at, and then he becomes the assessor. So when Rishi goes into the room, Frank is really the grader. And the nice thing about it is standardized. So the you might say, well, just do it. Have Rishi go in and see patients and then assess them. But because there's so much variability among the faculty, there's so much variability among the patients, that our student colleagues begin to say, this isn't really good, that we've got that much variation. You're really not getting at what we need. So this has been a great invention, so to speak.
What are the measurements? How do you know if it works? What does Frank come out of one of these interactions and tell you?
Do you want to speak to that, Frank, in terms of how you measure the students when they're in the room?
Well, by the way they act, how they approach us, and what questions that they ask. I mean, they have their line of questions that bring out what we want. We have a certain amount of answers that we're supposed to give them, and they're supposed to figure it out what we got.
Now, Frank is armed with a checklist that has been statistically verified and, again, by our colleagues after we pilot these things. So he's, you know, making the checks as he's going along, or waits till afterward, and then
that's it's not just a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
No.
Was it a big deal when the medical college adopted this model? Did it take a paradigm shift?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, because it was the old, we do this. You know, for generations, doctors have been trained. We know about patients. We can do this. And what we had to basically look at is, okay, the education specialist came in and said, let's look at the data, and then began to show us the variability. They take a student like Rishi, he'd behave the same way when four or five different scenarios, and the statistics were terrible.
Well, and let me ask a question to Rishi. How important is this standardized patient interaction in your medical training? Put it in the context of everything else you do.
Well, I think it's very important. Just to prepare for the exam itself, you have to actually think of what kind of question you need to ask, how do you need to behave, what kind of physical examination you need to do, and how are you going to guide the patient as you exit the room. So I think it's very important. Some things that also prepares you for the exam that we have to take, actually. It's called the Step 2 CS exam. It's actually a national exam that every medical student has to take. So these OSCEs that we do in pretty much every month now as a third-year student, they prepare us for this exam and also for patient care.
How long have you – when do you first start doing OSCEs as a medical student?
We actually started in first year. First year is basically just doing the history, no physical exam, just to – get to know the patient and establish rapport and learning how to establish rapport. Second year, you sort of move on to doing the physical exam in addition to the history. And then third year, you have to do everything, including guide the patient.
Can you compare how good you were at this when you were a first-year student to how good you are now?
Oh, well, first year, everybody's scared to see the patient, and you don't know how to behave, and you don't know what kind of questions to ask. And then you sort of get used to it and get to know how to establish a report. And second year, once again, start from scratch, how to do a physical exam. And you don't know how to do it, first of all, to begin with. And then now you have to practice it on a patient who may actually have a symptom or a sign. So it's very challenging, but I think very interesting as well.
Frank Bever, let me follow up with one quick question for Frank Bever. Do you know going into it whether the person that's going to see you is a first year or a fourth year medical student?
Oh, it's a big difference because I've met some of these same students that I had took them in the first year, and I've met them again in the second or third year. It's unbelievable what the difference there are in their questioning and they're being relaxed and coming and asking us what we're doing.
I imagine you see some first-year students and they walk out of the room and you say to yourself, my God, this guy has a long way to go.
Well, they're practically sweating when they when they ask you the questions the first time.
Dr. Duthi, you had something to add. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mitch, I just wanted to make the point, what Rishi's referring to, the clinical skills exam, we have consumer demand in a sense to do this because now the agencies that accredit physicians have said we're going to do this nationally. So as part of his requirements for graduation, he has to take that separate examination, as does every medical student in America. So the students want to be familiar with this whole context.
Is there a particular significance to the use of standardized patients in teaching geriatrics? Are interpersonal relationships between doctors and patients different when the generational gap is large?
Well, I think they are, and I think the other point is that geriatrics, we refer to ourselves as high-touch, low-tech. And so this is a particularly important vehicle for us because we're not looking at, you know, catheters and echocardiograms and other skills like that. We're looking at, can you extract information? Can you connect with patients and help with those types of things?
Can you feel the difference, Rishi Parmar, when you're working with, say, Frank, who is an older patient versus dealing with somebody who's younger? Is there a perceptible difference as you walk into the room and you see somebody who is older in age?
Yeah, I think the older patients tend to be easier to talk to. They're more patient. Especially as first and second years and maybe even early third year, we take a lot of time to do our history and physical exams, and our perfect patients are actually elderly patients because they don't have to go anywhere.
They're not checking their watch every couple of seconds.
Exactly.
But if I could make a point, Mitch, that you're bringing up, is that's one of the things we would key on as a faculty or ask Frank to do, which is, does Rishi have ageistic biases? So when he comes in the room, does he have some stereotype that we need to rearrange, so to speak, so that he's a better physician and doesn't fall into the trap of some of the prejudices that we're all vulnerable to?
Frank Bever, talk about the kind of training that you got to become a standardized patient. You've been doing this for, 7 years
they
now.
They give us a script that we have to go by. We take on a name of somebody like the doctor says. They set up from some disease, some of their office interviews and stuff. They set up. We have to learn the script, what they have, the cancers that we should give. Sometimes we even give wrong answers so that they can get it, whatever it is. We have to learn it.
Do you find yourself after 7 years knowing intuitively how to behave if they said you have to go in there with hyperthyroidism or diabetes?
Sometimes I wonder whether I'm doing it right or wrong, but I try to act as though I'm just coming into the doctor's office. But sometimes we do it 10 times in one day. It's a little tiresome at the end of the day, but we try to act like we actually have this sickness.
How do you choose the scenarios that this is an appropriate model for?
Yeah, when I first got into this, I sat down and I started using my imagination, and the educational specialist said, stop. Just tell us what happened in the last patient interaction that you had. So essentially, it gets kind of easy for us because we're just going with real-world scenarios, and those seem to work out the best. But again, you have to pilot it and see how it goes.
Has your role, Frank, as a standardized patient, changed your relationship with your own doctors? Do you understand more about how your real doctor behaves?
Oh, sure, because you understand what they have to go through to learn to be a doctor. I mean, they have an enormous amount of schooling, enormous amount of stuff they have to put into their head before they become a doctor, and you respect that. And I also talk to my doctor about this. He knows that I do this, and he thanks me for it. And all the doctors have always thanked me for it. I appreciate that. And the students also have thanked me for it.
After a lifetime, presumably, of seeing doctors now and again for whatever reason, do you think that is there one particular lesson that, as a standardized patient, you're hoping to impart to the doctors that you're helping train?
Well, I think so. I learned that you better be honest with the doctor and tell him what is really wrong with you, and tell him is in the best way you can that he would understand what is bothering you or hurting you, so that he can diagnose it.
Rishi Parmar, has there been anything? Have you had any especially embarrassing interactions as you've worked with standardized patients?
Oh, yeah. Basically, especially initially, I would forget to ask certain questions, and those are the things I should really be thinking. But as you have gone through the 3 years, and now I'm a fourth-year student, I think it's gotten to be a lot easier, and you should think of the worst things that can happen and make sure you ask those questions. And then sort of the common bread-and-butter problems and sort of the zebras, even if you don't ask them, it's okay because there's always next time. But you don't want to forget the worst, and you don't want to forget the most common things.
If I can make a comment too, Mitch, many of this is video and audio taped, and
that was my next question.
No one knows better than you how things can come back to haunt you when you go. And what we've done with the students, particularly with Frank's work, is we ask them as a group then to go look at the tape, critique it, and it's very humbling.
I imagine that that not only getting to see it for yourself, but seeing it in front of a group of people.
Correct.
Is well. And how do you use those critiques? Do you stop the tape and say, "Okay, so and so, how would you have done it differently?"
Well, in the case of the ones we did with Frank, we had peer interaction. So it was the group of students, and then we asked them to distill that and come back to us. And I think that worked pretty well because the sense of collegiality and trying to constructively criticize their peers.
Frank, is there one particular condition that's especially hard as an actor to capture and convey to a doctor or a doctor in training?
I don't really think there's anything that's harder. I mean, there's some students that are harder. They don't ask the questions. They're a little nervous, and they don't seem to ask right. It's harder to convey what you want to them.
You don't get the scenarios and say, "Oh man, now I've got to have diabetes again."
Well, again, we learned what is important to a doctor. I mean, there are certain things that are important, like background and what is really bothering you. It isn't just
a simple question of what the symptoms are.
No.
Well, Frank Bever and Rishi Parmar and Dr. Edmund Duthie, thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Edmund Duthie, Jr. is professor of medicine and chief of the Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and also the section leader of geriatric medicine at the Zablocki VA Medical Center. Rishi Parmar is a fourth-year medical student at the Medical College of Wisconsin studying gerontology. And Frank Bever spent 31 years of his life delivering bread for the Jaeger Bread Company. He's now spending part of his retirement working as a standardized patient, helping teach students at the Medical College of Wisconsin. That's Lake Effect for a Wednesday. A lot of people were needed to pull off this live broadcast from the Pabst Theater, including our engineer, Tom May. Bonnie North stage managed the whole affair. The rest of our rock star production team, Dan Harmon, Stephanie Lecce, and Maggie Kingsbury all played key roles as well. Annalise Hensel is the executive producer of Project Milwaukee. Special thanks to the Pabst Theater, in particular Laura Miller, Kyle Bergsbachen, and Bob Zanoni for the accommodations today and the logistical support. And thanks to our studio audience here and our loyal listeners at home. I'm Mitch Tite. Goodbye from the Pabst Theater, and please join us again tomorrow and every weekday, 10 in the morning, 11 at night for Lake Effect from WUWM HD, Milwaukee Public Radio. And give yourselves a hand.